and welcome to Estate Frequencies, a podcast that brings together space, sound, and story. This episode takes place in Chongpang, which is a neighborhood in Yishun. I'm your host, Mark Nair. A few things to take note of before we begin. If you're walking with us in Singapore, please prioritize your safety and comfort. Please walk on the sidewalks or 5-foot ways at all times. Be aware of oncoming traffic. Please be respectful when taking photos or videos. And if you're joining from somewhere else, please ensure you're in a safe and comfortable space before you continue. At any time, feel free to pause and explore your surroundings. Wherever you are right now, welcome and enjoy the tour. This is episode 2 of 2 that explores the present neighborhood of Chongpang City and the echoes of Chai Kee Village that preceded it. If you're carrying on from episode 1, you should be standing at the Block 101 bus stop along Sembawang Road. A large entrance that spells out Chongpang City should be overhead. Take a bit of time to look around. When you're ready, walk down between blocks 101 and 106. To the man on the street, when Chai Kee Village was demolished, what was erected in its place was one of Singapore's many modern housing estates. But why is it called Chongpang City and not Chai Kee City? There was a Chongpang Village that used to be near where Sembawang MRT station is today. West Hill Estate was renamed by the Singapore Rural Board in 1956 to commemorate Lim Chongpang, a prominent civil servant. He was also the son of rubber tycoon and community leader Lim Nee Soon. West Hill Estate was established by Lim Chongpang on his father's former rubber plantation, but the estate was abandoned during World War II. Its shophouses were converted into a red light district for the Japanese army, but it sprang back to life after the war and persisted until the end of the 1980s. Oddly enough, the government chose to re-establish Chongpang City on the site of the old Chai Kee Village. This continuity meant that many residents and shopkeepers from the old Chongpang Village made a crossover to start again. Meanwhile, Chai Kee Village residents had to contend with this hybrid sense of identity as Chai Kee Village remained only as a memento in their minds. But development never seems to end in Singapore. At the time of this recording, the old community centre and part of Block 101 is being rebuilt as an integrated development, adding yet another layer of growth to the neighbourhood. If you have reached a natural junction, turn left and walk along the hawker centre, then turn right when you have reached its corner. Walk straight down until you reach Yishun Ring Road. Thank you. By this time, you would have reached another gateway. In front of Block 103 is a panda statue commemorating an agreement with Chongpeng City and Sindhu County Chengdu satellite town of Sichuan, China, to establish a sister city relationship in 1994. This poem offers a playful take on sister cities. Questions of affection. What does one gain from a sibling city? Do they mirror each other with the same confluence of streets and shops? Do they both have ring roads pledging their love? Do their massage therapists go on exchange? Do fruit sellers get preferential shipment of fresh produce? Do they dream of seasons, of change? What do their parents offer these sisters? And why not brother cities? Was this a way to placate the one-child policy? Another city by proxy? Does every neighborhood that has a city appended to its name gain permission to seek a sibling? What makes a city anyway? Is it a certain density or vision? Is it the possibility of growth, whether vertical or underground? Do pandas roam the streets of Chongpeng? Do otters swim the canals of Sindhu County? Do they dream of going on holiday together someday? Will they leave behind the root and tangle of traffic, skip down a country lane, maybe in Spain, and search for another sibling, another home? Cross under the gateway and walk down Yishun Ring Road. In case you forget, and it's easy to given how different everything looks, all this was once part of Chai Kee Village. Aswani Aswath is a playwright and poet who has lived in Yishun her whole life. Her mother, Mrs. Kumar, grew up in Chai Kee Village. Mrs. Kumar tells us more. Mrs. Kumar.
Hi.
Could you tell me what your childhood was like in Chai Kee Village?
My childhood was a mixture of good and bad. Good in the sense that we had a chicken farm. We had our own trees, like rambutan, guava, banana and durian. We don't have to rush to the market to buy things. I played games like hide and seek, chapte and hopscotch. I played with my neighbours. My secondary school Tamil teacher knew all my siblings. She's still alive and she still can recognise me and will ask me about my siblings. In the kampong, there was no proper light. In my early 20s, my mother used to wait for me at the main road to fetch me back because she was afraid that somebody might harm me.
What about your neighbours in Chai Kee Village? Were they mostly Chinese or was it a mix of?
Chinese were at the other side. They called the third pipe lane and then the second pipe and the first pipe. First pipe, second pipe, they were Indians. The third pipe lane, they were Chinese.
Do you know why it's called third pipe, second
pipe? I don't know, because there's some pipe system for bathing and all that. So it is called pipe system.
Was it difficult to get around or to get out of the village to go down, like say, to town? How did you go? Was it bus?
Yeah, we had buses. Like Orchard 167, there was this 167 bus which goes to Orchard. So we had to go to the 2 kilometers away, the bus stop, to go to Orchard, take the bus to Orchard.
You had to walk 2 kilometers to get the bus?
Yes.
Around what year was this? In the 60s or 70s?
I think 70s.
In the 70s.
Yeah.
And you moved out of the village when it was redeveloped?
Demolished and they built flats.
Right. And did they offer you another
place? They built flats down there. Mm. And they have a cemetery also. Cemetery and other. So they demolished everything and they built flats.
Do you keep in touch with anyone from the village?
Yes, my friend Rani. We used to go to school together and second language together. Then I lost touch when we get flats. She did go to Yishun also. Yishun, don't know which block was that, but I didn't really keep in touch. And then after a few years, I met her at Chongpeng. Then we exchanged numbers and even till today, I'm in contact with her.
What were your feelings like when Chai Kee Village was demolished? And why do you continue to stay in Yishun?
I was very happy because we know that we will be given a flat with better facilities. And then we didn't have to get wet because of the rain. Flats are cleaner and safer. I was quite afraid to take the lift because we stayed on the 7th floor. In my 20s, I got to know my husband. We wanted to purchase a flat. At first, we wanted to purchase at Bukit Batok, but we had to wait for 2 years. I also heard rumors that there is a ghost in Bukit Batok flats doing housework. that time I heard.
A ghost?
A ghost, yeah.
Doing housework.
Housework. So I didn't want to purchase a house there. We managed to get a house in Yishun, a resale flat, and we had no choice but to accept it. We sold the house and bought another house in Yishun, which is an executive apartment now. Present, I'm staying here.
What do you like about Yishun?
There's nothing much. Actually, because I'm used to the area, that's all. But if you want to go anywhere, it's very far. But now we have MRT, it's quite convenient.
Does anything remain of Chaki Village today?
No, there's nothing much, nothing left.
At this point, you should still be walking along Yishun Ring Road. Aswani has more modern memories of life in Yishun. She reveals a fragment of them in this monologue.
By the time I reached Elka Music School, it was already 10 minutes into my lesson. Thankfully, Mr. Chow was not a stickler for punctuality. I remembered his collared shirts, rim of white hair across his bald head, and round vintage glasses. "Go in for your lesson, practice hard." He ushered me to the wooden door, a cool breeze of musty odour blowing into my face. Amidst the peeling, yellowing walls was a lean and sprightly Jeremy rehearsing for a violin concerto, a metronome dictating a 3-4 tempo. He stopped and looked at my tired face. "Okay, let's start with the arpeggios." The first time I see a group of foreign workers rolling down the hill from my window, I wonder if I should video them. Such a voyeur, I know. But I need proof. Should I decide to angry type an email to the town council, blasting these workers for being inconsiderate to sleeping residents at 3 in the morning? Cans of beer scattered on the grass, checkered lungis propped up their waists. I can already see the barrage of discriminatory remarks on social media, emboldening the noisy few to incite unsolicited racist conclusions. Am I going to be the joy-sucking reason behind a bunch of guys having a fun night out? My head hits the pillow and I let their drunk laughs drift me back to sleep. When Mr. Chow saw the broken bowl, he did not know what to say. It just broke when I was using it. I flat out lied. The truth was, my father had used it to whack me. It was tough having to keep up with violin practice amidst my O-levels. By the time I was done with schoolwork, it would be night and I didn't want to disturb the neighbors with my creaky playing. "I spent $800 on that violin," was my father's response. I needed to pass the ABRSM and then do a diploma in music and then teach it to others. That was his plan. Somehow, every hobby needed to turn into an investment. Never mind having to decipher the quick finger movements and tolerating the arm aches. "Make sure the bow does not go beyond the bridge. You're doing it again," my instructor would nag. What happened to the innocent idea of wanting to look cool like the Bond Quartet? Pyak! The bow hit my backside. Its tip split open and the strands of horse hair drooped down like wilted stalks. "Why do you break my bow?" I screamed. That was typical of my father, grabbing anything nearby in a forceful fit. A plastic cup, the remote control, the dictionary. Now I could not practice, and wasn't that the very thing he wanted me to do? "Then only you'll learn how to appreciate it." I tried to fight back my tears. It was just a stupid bow against his silly logic, but the waterworks would not stop. "Hello, Yishun Police Post. How can I help you?" "Hello, I would like to make a report about some noise down my block. Some people have been arguing for the past hour." 7 minutes later, the flickering red and blue lights reach the car park. I lie on my back, trying to make out the voices of the officers. "Do you know you're disturbing residents?" an officer asks. There's no answer and I hold my breath, wondering if anyone would glance up at the windows in the surrounding flats to spot the tattletale. "Why do you anyhow call the police, looking for trouble?" I hear my father's gruff voice in my head. The people in question are quiet now. The silence is deafening.
Carry on walking the ring road until you reach a large temple across from Ahmad Ibrahim Primary School.
Thank you.
When you have reached the temple, you may enter or stop and observe from the outside. This temple began in 1950 as a shrine housed in a kampong shed in Chai Kee village. It was first called Five Tigers Temple after its principal deities. In 1960, the temple relocated to 11.5 milestone at Sembawang Road and was renamed Chu Siang Tong, meaning a place where believers gathered. Due to redevelopment, the temple had to move once again in the 1980s. Chu Siang Tong purchased this piece of land at Yishun Ring Road together with another temple, Wah Swa Keng Temple. The current temple was completed in 1987. Today, the temple is noted for its charitable work, such as granting of bursaries and educational funds to poor students and serving the elderly. If you walk inside, you'll find a prominent shrine dedicated to a tiger just inside the gate. Take your time to pause the podcast and wander around. When you're done marveling at the intricacies of migratory gods and their itinerant worshippers, carry on walking past the temple. You'll pass the Teochew Memorial Park, set a little bit away from the main road. If the gate is open, do step in for a closer look. This 6-acre memorial park is a significant place for the Teochew community. Many of the migrants who came here in the 1800s and 1900s were Teochew. The park used to be one of the many cemeteries owned by Teochew clan Nian Kongsi to bury its kinsmen. Over the years, many of these Teochew cemeteries were acquired by the government for redevelopment. The exhumed remains from these cemeteries are also housed here today. Approximately 20,000 bodies of the unnamed deceased rest in peace here. Facing the gates of the park is an obelisk erected in 1962. Round the back, four Chinese characters meaning "Remember our ancestors" are engraved in clerical script by Teochew calligrapher Yang Wei Chun, exhorting visitors to remember early Teochew migrants. Next to the memorial is Yishun Columbarium. Dating back over 40 years, it houses 16,000 niches, but is no longer available for booking. Those who are interred here become the memory of the estate, enshrined and remembered in garlands of plastic flowers, unburnt joss sticks, and a steady stream of family members. Walk among the niches and look at these names and faces, some more recent than others. Most of them were from Chai Kee village. This prose poem, Past Lives, ponders a series of imagined lives from the columbarium. If you don't wish to enter, you may stay at the entrance and listen to the poem. Past Lives. They called me Jaga. I slept on a tilam in front of the guardhouse most nights. People would laugh and wonder, what's there to take from the school? Chairs, tables, even copper insulation. There's always something to steal. And there are the kids who break in to scrawl their names or make out on the teacher's table. And there are the ghosts too. Those that want to go out. Sometimes, it's also about keeping things in. I ran a little provision store on the long street for 30 years. It started from the front of my house. First, the essentials, rice, few cans of food, cooler or chilled drinks. Then people stopped by for shampoo, plates, raffia string. Soon, I moved to my cousin's across the road and my entire house became a shop. The days were long, but people were kind. I'm glad I left the village before everything was torn down. Leave a flower for me if you can. I married into Chai Kee village. I'm an Orang Selat and fell in love with the rubber tapper from Fujian. Not everyone liked us in those days. They saw us as grifters, itinerant layabouts, who only like to fish in the straits. They call us children of no country because we came and went as we please. But they always loved my ikan goreng and my nasi ulam, old recipes told to me like family stories. When we become nothing but photographs and niches, these are the only things worth keeping. After the columbarium, walk to the junction of Yishun Ring Road and Yishun Avenue 2. Cross the road in the same direction that you're currently walking. To your left lies Canberra. Peeking out from the side of a hill is Masjid Darul Makmur, and just a little further down is Canberra Plaza. Press pause and continue playing the episode when you've crossed the road. Somewhere on your right is the free medical clinic, and around us is the enduring memory of Ahmad Ibrahim, a young activist and politician who made such an impact on his community that two schools were named after him. In this area, there used to be a number of other schools, the most famous being Lee Cheng School, set up in 1939 by one of the pioneers of Chai Kee Village, Tan Chu Chuan, who built a small hut beside his chicken farm and turned it into a private school. After the war, Lee Cheng School resumed classes in a stilt house left by the Japanese army at Suli. After a few years, the school was moved to the new village area, Osinba. The school was comprised of long atap houses with three classrooms. Far away from the main entrance of Chai Kee Road, it was a green oasis with rambutan and casuarina trees in the grounds. The teachers established a tropical fish research corner and the first basketball court in the village. But the real pride and glory of Lee Cheng School was its dedicated table tennis training room in the 1960s. This was unprecedented for a kampung school. In the 1960s, the two top players of the village, Pek Noi Hui and Liao Chu Huat, represented Singapore in numerous competitions, winning titles and trophies for many years. In the 1970s and 80s, a new generation led by Liao Hock Mau and Tan Ah Tee took over the reins and achieved similar levels of success. Chai Kee Village was the cradle of the national table tennis team. More than 10 national players trained in its hall. Lee Cheng School was lost in its entirety, along with the rest of Chai Kee Village in 1978, bringing an end to an era where success in sports was not defined by a national agenda or by standardized training programs, but ground-up support, pride, and belief. If you've reached Yishun Street 21, press pause until you cross the road. Keep walking in the same direction. Mr. Liao of the Cheng Tech Association was a student of Lee Cheng School. He tells us a little bit more about life in the school.
I was attending primary school in 1952. Kampung life wasn't so good back then. Every family had a lot of children. As students, we were aware that our family situations were not too good. So, when I was primary 5, I helped to raise pigs while studying. We had morning and afternoon sessions in school, so I would study in the morning, then head home and return in the afternoon to continue studying. In 1961, I graduated from primary school and attended secondary school. That was pretty much our lives back then. Honestly speaking, kampung living was really harsh. Every family had so many children, and it was really tough.
Yishun Ring Road cuts through the heart of Nee Soon East, a self-contained neighbourhood that sits about 10 minutes from North Point City. Here, you'll find the usual heartland shops with familiar favourites like Sri Dewa, a men's barber, and for the women, Georgie de Salon. The latter is a throwback to days when it was chic to be as French as possible. So this shop joins the ranks of its compatriots, such as Hair the Arts and Colours in Serangoon or Le Hair Salon in Jurong. If you have time, wander around the shops, find a place to sit and observe the comings and goings of the residents. While Singapore may seem to have cookie-cutter housing estates, older neighbourhoods such as Yishun have been around for close to 50 years now and have developed unique quirks and facets of identity that allow a sense of belonging to go deeper than access to amenities or the presence of McDonald's. Turn left and walk between blocks 293 and 264. Walk through the block, and on its left-hand side, you will find the Chai Kee Village Heritage Garden, populated by images from a book by Sunny Ng. Sunny is a retired designer who grew up in Chai Kee Village. He decided to preserve his memories of Chai Kee after both his parents were diagnosed with dementia, illustrating the sites, spaces, and people that populated his childhood. After 5 years, he published Chai Kee, Tracing Footsteps Home, a microcosm of history, community, and camaraderie. Before we end this episode, here's an interview with Sunny. Sunny, what do you miss most about Chai Kee Village?
With regards to this question, there are two aspects that I miss the most. The first is this simple and unhurried kampong culture that is next to nature. And the other aspect that I miss is the feeling of camaraderie. But among the two, I find that the latter is impossible to restore. Because with the former, at least we can still restore our natural surroundings. But with the latter, it takes a long time to foster an environment where everyone knows one another.
What's the most surprising thing you discovered while developing the content for your book?
The surprising thing was that I thought I knew a lot about this familiar yet estranged village, but I actually found out that I did not know much about it.
What have you gained through the process of writing and illustrating this book?
I'm happy to record down the story of the village, and in the process of writing the book, I was able to rediscover the relationships and bonds with others within the village.
Do you have any personal stories of Chai Kee Village to share?
I have too many stories to tell, but I have two special people I wish to share about. One of them is my grandmother. She was a patient woman who took care of a young man who was a handful of trouble. That would be my father, Liang Siji. Another person I wish to talk about is a young teacher who eventually became the first principal of Lichun Secondary School. During the resistance against the Japanese during the Second World War, he left his newly married wife to fight against the Japanese, but he was arrested while raising funds for the anti-Japanese effort. He then died in a Japanese military police camp before he could be liberated. He was my second uncle, Wang Lianfeng.
How else would you like Chai Kee Village to be remembered?
I believe that in terms of preserving history, we can continue to collect more information on Chai Kee Village and publish these stories. Or perhaps we can find appropriate sites to design murals or other kinesthetic 3D models or statues to allow residents and visitors to know that there is a history of the place.
Thank you for listening to Estate Frequencies, Chongpang and Chai Kee. The tour ends here. And if you are heading back to Yishun MRT, bus number 800 in front of block 227 will take you there. Or you could also take a slow walk back. If you have time, check out Uncanny Yishun, another two-episode podcast that starts and ends at Yishun MRT station. Estate Frequencies, Chongpang and Chai Kee is written and narrated by Mark Nair. Sound design, recording, and post-production by Saturn Sound Studio. Sunny's interview was dubbed in English for this episode, and you can listen to the original on the Estate Frequencies website, www.estatefrequencies.com. I'm Mark Nair, and I wish you a lovely heritage-filled day ahead.